You're listening to the Netmums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Alison Perry. Coming up on this week's show...
We do talk openly, I think, because I always say to the kids, nothing's going to embarrass me. You know, no question you ask me is going to embarrass me. I would have heard it before. You know, I always say, people ask me embarrassing questions at work all the time and I don't mind. So they do ask me things and they'll tell me things. But I've actually sat down with Millie and read it. We read it together, the girls' book. And... it was so helpful. I sat there and read, obviously I knew what was in it because I wrote it, but I sat there and read it with her and I just thought, this is great.
But before all of that,
this episode of the Netmums podcast is brought to you by Fairy Non-Bio, the number one laundry brand for sensitive skin.
They've partnered with Great Ormond Street Hospital Children's Charity to support seriously ill children and their families. With every Fairy Non-Bio pack bought from Home Bargains, Fairy Non-Bio will donate 5p to Gosh Charity with a minimum donation of £100,000.
I know where I'm going after this. Now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Netmums podcast. Now, I need to talk to you and to my lovely co-host and to our guest about winter lurgies. I actually missed a podcast recording last week because I was too poorly to move. My children are playing what I have kind of coined snot ping pong, where one gets it and then just as you think you're at the end of it, the other one gets it. And Alison, you've got three of them. Tell me about snot ping pong.
Oh my goodness, it has been so much this weekend. I'm currently a bit lurgied, so if I suddenly disappear to blow my nose, you know what I'm doing. And also this weekend, myself and my husband, we've been playing that game of who's kind of feeling worse. So in other words, it's like, can you go and run the bath for the kids because I'm feeling really bad? And it's, can you go and make their dinner because I'm feeling really bad? And it's just like competing.
Yeah, you do bedtime because I'm really...
exactly.
Poorly. Yeah. Well, we couldn't actually have a better guest for this. So do your showbiz intro.
Well, we're joined today by Dr. Emily McDonough, NHS doctor, writer of OK Magazine's Health and Parenting column, and author of Growing Up for Girls and Growing Up for Boys. She's also a mum of two with another baby on the way with her husband, Peter Andre, who we've had on the pod, and he sang her praises to us. Dr. Emily, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. First of all, can we say huge congratulations on
Thank you so much. It's feeling more real now. I think when you start telling people, it does feel a little bit more real, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, see, it felt real when I started throwing up out of my nose.
That was real to me.
Oh,
sorry, everybody. Am I right, Emily? You're a junior doctor, yeah?
I guess technically, until you're a consultant, you're a junior doctor. It's yes, probably then. Yeah, I don't really think of it like that, but yes, harsh, I probably am.
You guys are absolute heroes. Tell us about your work.
I love my work. I feel really, really lucky. I feel lucky to work, to be part of the NHS and to work for the NHS. But I work in mental health, so you know we're busy, but it's a privilege every day. To be honest, I know that sounds like a cliche, but it really is. You get people sharing, you know, such personal things, and yeah, it's a privilege. I do love it.
What's it like juggling that work as an NHS doctor with media work, doing podcasts like this, doing glitzy red carpet events with your husband? Does it feel like going from one extreme to the other?
It can do sometimes. I mean, sometimes I'll literally finish work and then we'll whiz off and, you know, we'll go and do get dressed up for something. Not that often, actually. We do tend to stay at home quite a lot these days, a little bit boring. But it's more kind of juggling the kids. I think that's where, you know, we, between us, with Pete's work and my work, we kind of just try and do it between us as best as we can. But it's like any working family, I guess. It's just the juggle constantly, all the driving around. It's when I regret signing them up for so many clubs.
Oh, tell me about it. Are either of yours at secondary school yet?
Not yet. They're both still primary. Millie's in year 5, Theo's in year 2.
I've just entered the secondary school fray. And I've realised that the juggle just gets even busier.
Does it?
Because there's like, oh, I've got this club and that club and I'd like to go to Costa with my friends. Will you pick me up? And I'm like, oh, Christ, I've turned into mum's taxi.
We're not at that stage yet, luckily.
But Dr. Emily, do you know what's actually quite good is when you do get to the secondary stage, I don't know what it's like where you live, but we live somewhere quite built up and my 13-year-old can walk to her friend's house and she can walk to her dance class. And it's actually quite good. It's like, off you pop, you can just take yourself off.
Yeah.
It's not all bad.
Oh, see, I'm in the sticks. Can't do
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Can I just interrupt before I ask the question? I love the fact you're doing what I did with Dr. Range and you're calling Emily Dr. Emily.
Emily, would you like to be called Emily or Dr. Emily?
Totally up to you. Whichever feels easier. My surname's quite difficult to pronounce, so I at work, I quite often go with Dr. Emily because I think it's too hard otherwise. Yeah, whatever you prefer, I'm happy.
So is it true that you and Pete first met because he had kidney stones and was treated by your dad?
That is true, yes. It's a really long story, which I won't bore you with. But yeah, that's essentially what happened. And then we became friends. Our families became friends after that. And then it was, a few years down the line. So, yeah, so thank goodness for kidney stones. It's a weird thing to say.
Romantic. So romantic. That's what you can have on all your anniversary cards, kidney stones.
Yes.
Yeah. Memories. Do you think that being a doctor makes you like worry more about your kids' health? I mean, obviously you work in mental health, so I'm imagining that you're thinking more about that side of things. But do you worry about things more, knowing all of the things that can go wrong and seeing all the problems that are out there? Or do you worry less because you kind of know how to handle those sort of conversations?
I think a bit of both. I think sometimes knowledge doesn't always help because you know what can go wrong and you know what, I mean, ultimately we see the worst case scenarios, don't we, you know, in the job that I do. So part of me does worry about that. You know, if they get a rash, I'm thinking, oh, you know, what's this to do with, you know, but actually as well, then the knowledge kicks in and you go, well, actually, no, I know that's not a meningitic rash. It's a such and such a rash. You know what I mean? So I think it's probably a bit of both. Generally, I'm quite calm, though. I generally just try and stay calm. And I actually just take them to the GP. I try not to make decisions myself at home because I think it's too hard to do that when it's your own family. So I actually just take them to the doctor like everyone else does and then hand over to them and they can make the decisions a lot more efficiently probably than I can.
So what has been with Millie being in year five and getting older, what's been the high and low points of your 10 years as a mum?
Gosh, that's a really good question. I think I feel really lucky in general. I think they're both like very well behaved. They're very sweet. We haven't really had any kind of like issues, particularly with school or, you know, anything like that. I've been really lucky. Obviously, we have the normal parenting stuff and I feel tired all the time, I think that's fair to say. But I actually really love their company. I love being with them. I just take them with me to do stuff all the time. Yeah, I don't know about lows. I don't know if I've really had any like real lows with them. But I guess I feel like I'm learning all the time as a parent. I feel like before you have kids, you think you're going to know what to do and you think it's all going to come to you naturally. And that, for me, that certainly didn't happen. I just constantly learning as I go along and doing your best, and I've definitely made mistakes. And sometimes I'll say that to them. I say, oh, you know what? I'm really sorry about such and such, and I should have done it differently or whatever. But no, I love it. I love being a mum. Obviously, dynamic's going to change soon as well. Again, so looking forward to that.
Well, yes,
you will.
That's going to be interesting.
I feel like Wendy, you and I are like the kind of our kids are just getting into that teen hormonal thing, and all the parents who come on here who've got younger kids were like, just you wait.
I know, and I swore I wouldn't be that person. When I had like little kids and they'd be like, oh, enjoy the toddler years because the teen years are awful. And I'd be like, no, I don't want to hear it. And now I've turned into that person. I've got to shut up.
I would take teen years over toddler years any day, honestly. I just think, Emily, you did a post for, I think it was like Maternal Mental Health Week or something. Mm. And you were reflecting back on a time when I think your son was a very small baby and it was your daughter's third birthday. Mm-hmm. Was that kind of like a tricky time for you? Or do you feel like, yeah, you look back and think, obviously you are going to go back and do it all over again, but do you kind of like, are you kind of like steeling yourself for those kind of hard moments again?
Yeah, I think it was, Theo was, he was a tricky baby. He was like very unsettled and, you know, he had kind of the colic diagnosis and reflux diagnosis. He just was an unsettled baby. And yeah, it was tough. I think I didn't get much sleep at all for months. He literally just would cry all the time. But I think I would know more what to expect now. I think if we have another baby like that, I think I'll know more what to do. I developed some kind of coping strategies, I guess, and ways to help manage it that I think I'm hoping anyway. This is what I'm telling myself, guys. I'm hoping that I'll just have some kind of ways to cope with it, because Millie was so good. She slept through the night at 6 weeks old. This is easy. I can do this again. And then along came Theo. I thought, oh, no one prepared me for that.
I think that's the hardest bit. You never know what that particular baby is going to be.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're going to come out and are they going to be a screamer or a sleeper? And that, it's, who knows?
Well, I've had one screamer, one sleeper.
Do you prefer babies or toddlers? Because I reckon most people, I'd have 1,000 newborns, but I can't have another toddler.
No. I love the newborn stage. I just love it. If you just in a little while.
I have the newborn stage, but without all the hormones going on in my body and all the sleep deprivation. I'd quite like to have a newborn.
Yeah, the sleep, yeah.
So you mean you'd like a newborn and a night nap? That's what you're saying.
Oh, that's a good idea.
You'll be like that. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Now, obviously talking about like the teen years coming up, Emily, you've written books for kids about puberty and growing up. Yeah. Have you casually passed the girls' book to Millie and said, come back if you've got any questions? Or are you actually the kind of household where you talk really openly about puberty and bodies?
We do talk openly, I think, because I always say to the kids, nothing's going to embarrass me. You know, no question you ask me is going to embarrass me. I would have heard it before. You know, I always say people ask me embarrassing questions at work all the time and I don't mind. So they do ask me things and they'll tell me things. But I've actually sat down with Millie and read it. We read it together, the girls' book. And it was so helpful. I sat there and read, obviously I knew what was in it because I wrote it, but I sat there and read it with her and I just thought, this is great, because she actually took it in, I think, on a different level, having it there in the book. So
yeah,
it sounds so silly to say, but I just sat there, I thought, oh my gosh, this is great. I really love it. And I was so pleased with it at that point in time. So yeah, we've read it together. We kind of pick bits. Because she's only nine, so we pick bits out that are kind of relevant to her at the moment, whether it's like friendship stuff or, you know, some puberty stuff, that type of thing. But yeah, it was brilliant.
I wonder whether the key is, because kids seem to go through, like when they're younger, they don't get embarrassed about poo or bodies or whatever. They haven't learned to, you know, have that kind of embarrassment. I wonder whether the key is to get a book like yours and read it to them when they're like 6 or 7, when they're not embarrassed. And then again, when they're a bit older, and maybe that will help it go in a bit. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the book's aimed at sort of 8 to 11. So, you know, for me personally, I waited until she was starting to bring up some of the things where I thought, actually, I know that's in the book. And then we would sit down and read that bit together. But, you know, I think it depends on the child. You know, if it's a slightly older child, you could just give them the book and they could read it themselves. But I do try to... I would say to them, it's not a silly question. You can always ask me anything, because I think then when they really do need you for something, they'll know that they can come to you. Obviously, there's some things they're not going to want to ask me, isn't it? But we try and keep it like open.
I guess also you've got older teenagers floating around the house with Pete's kids as well. You guys, from obviously not everything you see on social media is real, but you seem to have got this blended family business absolutely nailed.
What?
Have your little kids got a good relationship with Pete's kids?
Yeah.
What's the key to making that run smoothly?
I don't know. I think they've got a lovely relationship, just a really, really lovely relationship. And I don't know what the key is, actually. I think they just get on. They're just lovely. The like dynamic between them all is really, really nice. And I feel really lucky for that. I think that all the time, you know, so lucky that they do all. Obviously, they do argue, especially Millie and Theo just bicker. They just bicker all the time. It drives us totally nuts. But no, in general, I think they just care about each other, you know, all of the kids. And yeah, it's very sweet. It's very sweet.
That's nice. That's nice. And then when Pete was on the podcast, he chatted to us about how it was your decision rather than his to hide the kids' faces on social media. And I did the same with my kids on social media. So we probably have quite similar reasons for it. But what are your feelings on it?
So I think for me, I always think this, you know, I don't know that I make the right decisions as a parent, and I just try and do what feels right for them at the time. And I just felt that actually, once you do it, you can't kind of take that back. So I just wanted to give ourselves time to kind of think about what felt like the right thing for them. And it's just felt right that we kind of keep their life a little bit more private. But, you know, I've always said the point may come where we change that, or the point may come where they're old enough and they understand a little bit more about what it means, you know, kind of social media and that type of thing. And they may want to be more involved in it. And I think at that time I'd have that conversation with them. But for now, I think it's just felt right for me as a mum, kind of for us as a family. And I think you've got to have quite thick skin for sort of social media and those type of things. I think it can be quite a difficult world. And certainly while they're little, it makes me feel comfortable at the moment anyway to kind of just keep them out of that a little bit. And like I said, having those conversations when they're old enough to understand and talk that through with me. So that's kind of, I don't know if that makes sense, but that's sort of where my rationale is for that. Just, I guess, as I said, once you do it, you can't really go back. So I'm just giving that time for them to understand it a little bit more and do what feels right, you know, what feels right for them, rather than me just deciding on their behalf that, yeah, you know, it's fine, you can be online. They might get to 15 and go, actually no, I don't want that, I just, you know, I'd rather not. So that's sort of where I've got it from.
With a 12-year-old, these conversations are just starting to happen now, and I sometimes wish I could teleport back to the Victorian age and not have to deal with all of this. Yeah.
Or even the 80s, Wendy. Doesn't have to be Victorian.
Yeah, that's true. Well, no, but I quite like the dresses.
It's funny, because even
from Victorian fox to dental health. Mm.
No, go on. Sorry,
I didn't mean to try. I was going to say, even for me growing up, it wasn't an issue at all. I mean, I didn't have a mobile phone until I was 16 or 17. So, you know, and I'm getting old, but I'm not that old yet. And, you know, so it's really been...
I didn't have one till uni. So that's how old I am, Wendy.
It's such a rapid change. And I think for parents, it's really difficult trying to navigate that, because it's not something we've had experience with. Like, if you're talking about puberty, you know, we've all gone through puberty. We can kind of have those chats with them. But I don't really know where to start with the social media stuff a lot of the time, or mobile phones, because it just wasn't a thing when I was growing up. I don't have that experience.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine how stressful it is for families when their child is seriously ill. But Fairy Non-Bio has partnered with GOSH Charity to provide some comfort.
That's right, Wendy. One of the areas that GOSH Charity funds is free accommodation for families located close to the hospital while their child is receiving treatment. Being able to stay close to their child and not worry about the cost helps ease the stress during what can be an extremely difficult time.
Between now and the 31st of March 2024, for every pack of Fairy Non-Bio detergent, Fairy Fabric Softener or Fairy Inwash Scent Boosters that you buy in home bargains, Fairy will make a 5p donation to GOSH Charity.
Which means that you can show your support as you shop. Now, back to our guest.
Now, I wanted to talk to you, going from social media to dental health, which is a slight segue, but anyway. I have always kind of struggled with the getting my kids to, not so much to brush their teeth, but to brush their teeth properly. Mm-hmm. And as they get older, they really don't want you standing over them saying, do this bit, do this bit. Because mine tend to just stand there and do one side, just like looking out the window. It's become a real problem, dental health with kids, hasn't it?
Definitely. I think oral health crisis is probably an accurate way to describe it. And there's lots of reasons for that. But that's kind of why I wanted to be here today, was to talk about the importance of kind of maintaining oral hygiene in kids and how we can do that in a way to encourage them and make it fun. Because like you said, it's not always easy. I've had the same with my kids. I don't think there's any kids out there who actually love brushing their teeth. So I think it's definitely a challenge, but I think it's so important, something that we really need to talk about more, you know, as a society, I think.
Yeah.
So how do we get around it? Tell us. You're the pro. Tell us.
I think, so for me personally, I think it's about, it's a kind of a combination approach. I think the first thing for parents to try as much as possible is the food, the diet side of it, in terms of trying to prevent things like dental cavities by avoiding too many kind of sugars. So things like, obviously chocolates and sweets, things like that. Also fruit juices, you know, things where there's kind of sugar exposure in the mouth for a long, long period of time. So that's one thing. Obviously then brushing teeth twice a day for 2 minutes and trying to make it fun. I think that's probably the best way to do it. That's what I try and do with my kids. We've got like a time, you know, like a little egg timer at home and, you know, trying to make it as fun and enjoyable as possible, kind of play games around it but it is tough. It is tough. I think, I guess it's another thing to think about as a parent, isn't it? And there's already lots of things to think about and do, but you know, it's the number one reason for kids getting admitted to hospital. So 5 to 9 year olds, number one cause of hospital admissions is, you know, dental cavity. So it's actually, it's not just, you know, to be a nagging parent. We're actually thinking about preventing children having to be admitted to hospital or go under general anaesthetic to have teeth removed. It's like the complications are serious, but it's important.
But I didn't, before we prepped for this podcast, I didn't know that fact. And that is so shocking to me. I imagined the number one reason kids ended up in hospital was breaking bones or falling off of trampolines or whatever. The fact that it's their dental hygiene and their oral health is insane to me. That blows my mind.
Yeah. And I think it's easy as well to underestimate the impact of having sort of poor oral hygiene on a child. So your teeth are obviously there for a reason, obviously biting, you know, chewing your food, but also speech and language development, even just their confidence. So, you know, being confident to smile, avoiding getting bullied. You know, I think lots of teachers have reported that children are getting bullied for not, you know, for their teeth and their oral hygiene or having cavities. So it's so important for their development, for even mental health. I would stretch it that far as well, in terms of, you know, just feeling confident about yourselves, avoiding being bullied and all missing school days. I think 2 in 5 parents have said that their kids have missed a day of school because of oral health issues or concerns, which is, you know, it's huge, isn't it, in terms of things like education.
Yes, yeah. Massive. So is brushing enough? Should we be doing more with our kids, like flossing or mouthwash? What's the best thing to be doing with them?
The most important thing is brushing. So twice a day for 2 minutes. Obviously using the right toothpaste and toothbrush for the age range, because there's varying contents of toothpaste that are different for different ages. For example, for much younger children, the fluoride content can be a bit lower in the toothpaste because, you know, obviously babies or toddlers may just swallow the toothpaste. So it's about getting the right toothpaste for the child for the age. Starting really early, and this is, I can't say this enough, and getting kids used to having their teeth cleaned as soon as their teeth appear. So we're talking probably like younger than a year. And I used to have the little silicone toothbrushes, you know, the ones that just go on the end of your finger with the little tiny bristles on them, and just getting them in their mouth. And when my kids were younger, they were kind of like, what on earth are you doing? They'd be half like chewing my finger or, you know, like just not really cleaning the teeth, but just getting them used to it is so important. Like I can't say that enough. And then I think, you know, if you want to do extra things on top, again, as long as you're getting the kind of age appropriate products, great. But I would definitely focus primarily on brushing, you know, and doing it really well. Good quality brushing twice a day.
And it's also not having kind of things in bottles for too long as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Am I right about that?
Yeah.
Because it swishes around your teeth? Am I talking
nonsense? No, not at all. So from about a year...
makes a change.
No, not talking nonsense at all. From about a year, you would want kids to be having kind of a sippy cup rather than a bottle. And I think, as I said earlier, kind of things like fruit juices, pretty much try to avoid them as much as possible. And certainly having fruit juice in any kind of... like a bottle, like you said, because it will kind of slosh around the teeth for longer. So it's much better to have it in a sippy cup, but milk and water really pretty much the two drinks to stick to. And I don't know, I guess it's different in every family, but because I've always done that with my kids, they've only ever had milk or water. That's just kind of what they're used to, and they don't really complain about it. If we go out for a meal, I might let them have an apple juice or something, and then it's like, oh, you know, special treat. But in the day-to-day, they never actually whinge about it because they're just used to it, I guess.
I failed with my twins. I've got 5-year-old twins. My eldest, who's 13, just had milk and water for years. And now my twins, it's like they want fruit shoots, they want squash. And it's like, oh no, I've failed.
It's not a failure, because I think it's so hard. You go in the shops and there's all these like very colourful, attractive looking drinks right there on the shelf. And, you know, I say this all the time, you can't do everything perfectly all the time. You can't, you know, never have sugar in your diet, or, you know, but I think it's about moderation, isn't it? And then if you're having those sugary things, making sure you're cleaning your teeth really well, trying to avoid having them in between meal times as well. So if you're going to have if they're going to have an apple juice, orange juice or whatever, have it with a meal, so that you're kind of minimizing the amount of time that your teeth are in contact with the sugary stuff. Could that make sense?
And that's to do with like the pH balance, isn't it? So that the pH balance of your mouth can return to normal. Is that why they have too many snacks?
So I think it's to do with the amount of time that the sugar is in contact with the teeth. So obviously the sugar in contact with the teeth and the bacteria that are on the teeth is what can then fester and create cavities. So by keeping it to meal times, you're avoiding having then sugar in contact with your teeth for prolonged periods in the day. But there's something around the pH as well, because if you have, for example, if you drank an orange juice, which is quite acidic, you don't want to clean your teeth straight afterwards, because then you can actually damage the enamel of the teeth. So it's things, it's a whole minefield of dental.
It is, isn't it?
I'm not a dentist.
Yeah, you're not. But I read a really good fact, which was this is why the French eat cheese at the end of a meal, because eating the cheese can, I guess, clean their teeth in a certain way, or get rid of the sugars in their mouth. So maybe giving your kid a block of cheese after they've had a yogurt or whatever it is might be the way forward.
Cheese is fantastic for your teeth. Obviously, being dairy, it's got calcium, low in sugar. Cheese is one of the great foods for your teeth. So yeah, tick for cheese on the dental health.
Big fat cross for raisins.
Oh no, not raisins. The worst.
I know, dried fruit. And this is where
everybody thinks like those little pots of raisins are great toddler snacks. And they are great toddler snacks, but it's that like, they just coat the kids' teeth in sugar.
Yeah, and that's a really difficult thing for parents, because you think something like dried fruit is good for your kids. You're like, great, I'm giving them fruit. Dried fruit, because they're quite sticky, they can stay in your teeth. And then, you know, then as I said, it's talking about like the prolonged exposure to the teeth of the sugar. Yeah. So, you know.
Now, before we let you go, Emily, I know that we touched briefly on the fact that there's a new edition coming, but you have another new edition coming in the form of a new book. Am I right?
Yes, I do.
I do. And I hope one is easier to give birth to than the other.
Yes, I do. I do have another book. I've just finished writing it. I'm really excited about it. More on a mental health side this time for kids. So yeah, I'm really excited actually.
And when does it come out?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know if we've got the date finalised yet. Think around January time. Yeah, January.
I look on Amazon. I think it was January. It was coming out. Emily, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been so fab to talk to you.
Thank you so much. I was just going to say, if anyone wants more information, the Aquafresh website, because obviously I'm partnered with Aquafresh for this campaign, and it's a fantastic campaign. They're going into schools and giving educational material for teachers and parents all around oral health, and just trying to get that message out there from an early age for kids. So yeah, please do have a look on their website for any more information about the dental health side of things. And thank you for having me. It's been really lovely.
Thank you, and good luck with the coming growth.
Thank you.
Just getting the coming growth. That sounds awful. Good luck with your burgeoning belly.
Thank you. I like that.
Is that even worse?
That's good. I like that.
She's like, get this woman off. Get rid of
her.
Cut. Lovely to meet you, Dr. Emily.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much for having me.
Just a reminder that this episode was brought to you by Fairy Non-Bio, who have partnered with GOSH Charity, whose registered charity number is 116-0024.
Fairy will donate 5p to Great Ormond Street Hospital Children's Charity for every pack of Fairy Non-Bio detergent, Fairy fabric softener or Fairy in-wash scent boosters purchased in Home Bargains between now and the 31st of March 2024, with a minimum donation of £100,000.